Welcome to The Buzz with ACT IAC, your source for the hot topics and top issues affecting the federal technology market. Join us each week to hear insights from government and industry experts, stay informed on the challenges facing the public sector, and gain access to valuable reports and thought leadership. Enjoy. Hi, listeners. This is Colin Larson. Welcome to the second episode of The Buzz with ACT IAC's miniseries, Demystifying Procurement, where we take you through the ins and outs of this complex but vital topic. In the first episode, which I'll link in the description if you missed it, we learned a bit about the history of contracting in the federal government from lawyer and author Jim Nagle. So now, in this episode, we're going to get a crash course on the current state of things. What's the process and how does it work? To teach us all about that is today's guest, Leslie Field. Leslie is the acting administrator for the Office of Federal Procurement Policy in the Office of Management and Budget. This is the department that establishes direction and strategy for the entire federal government acquisition system. So, it's safe to say Leslie knows a thing or two about procurement. Leslie Field, thank you for joining me on The Buzz.
Great to be here, Colin. Thanks so much.
So, to start, why is it that procurement is so important for the federal government to get right?
It's a great question, and thank you again for having me here, and always thanks to ACT IAC for fostering conversations around acquisition. We are, as you probably know, the world's largest buyer of goods and services. We spend over $600 billion every year on contracts, and so these are taxpayer dollars. These are your dollars at work, and so we have a real obligation to ensure that we're getting the very best value for that investment. So stewardship is very critical. And that really starts when we identify the need, but it extends throughout the life of the contract and contract performance. So very important that we get that right. But we also want to make sure that we're building and supporting our supplier base, especially our small disadvantaged businesses. So we want to create some meaningful opportunities for them to grow. And so making sure that we provide those opportunities and those kind of communication to support that, I think, is very important. And so finding approaches like category management, for example, that let us leverage our buying power to find good deals for the government while also supporting equity is really important. And OMB recently released guidance on this at M2203, Advancing Equity in Federal Procurement. So if your listeners are interested, go find that. That's a great resource as well.
I will be sure to link that in the description. So you mentioned category management. Let's talk about that a little bit. What is category management and how is this a departure from earlier practices?
Yeah. So for those of us who have been on the category management journey with us, it's been a long road, but it's also been a very successful one. As many folks remember, agencies often bought things on their own, right? We have 3,200 different buying organizations. And so there was a lot of one-off buying. And category management really organizes that spend into 10 different categories. We've got super support from the General Services Administration. We've got a program management office there that helps us with data analytics, with outreach, with vendor relationships. So it's a much more organized way to think about how we buy our common goods and services. And that's about two-thirds of what we purchase every year. So we want to make sure that we're doing that in a rational, organized way so that our contracting professionals can spend their time and talent on some of the more complex, higher visibility procurements. And by being more organized, we can go to market as a much better informed buyer. So that reduces unit prices. It also helps us to apply effective demand management strategies to make sure we're not overbuying or underbuying. And it also avoids a lot of duplicative administrative costs. And so that's, I think, an incredibly important advance in procurement. And really, it was a good year in 21 for category management. We have achieved a cumulative cost avoidance of $58 billion, which is really significant. And we've brought about $232 billion under the principles of category management. So I think that's critical. And we've trained over 18,000 people, and we have a small business utilization rate of almost 30%. So it's become very well ingrained, I think, in our DNA, which is terrific and allows us to do some more high value thinking around some of our more complex procurements.
So basically, instead of different agencies buying different products that accomplish the same thing, there's coordination between agencies to purchase something that can be more widely used.
Exactly. So of the 10 categories, you know, for example, information technology or medical, we've got the folks in the agencies who are the experts in buying those kinds of things, and they are managing those categories across the government. So finding best in class solutions that are high performing, making sure that we understand the market dynamics, making sure that we're not buying the same thing over and over again. Those are the important principles of category management, and it really has taken off. And I think it sets a really great platform for us to do all of the other work that we need to do.
Now I'd like to talk a little bit about just the procurement process as a whole. So after a need is identified, what is the bidding process like now, and how are agencies determining what supplier to use?
Right. So the bidding process is very important, and it seems very complex, I think, for a lot of folks. So as you said, as soon as a need is identified, whether it's posted on SAM or in some other way, it's really governed by the Federal Acquisition Regulation, the FAR. And once it's posted, agencies often post supplemental information. They've got question and answer sessions. They've got industry days. They've got lots of other ways to engage during the time that vendors are considering whether they should bid or not. And so I highly encourage potential suppliers to take a look at that solicitation document, figure out what they're being evaluated on, make sure they get all the information, and take advantage of some of the pre-proposal conferences and all of that that the agencies are offering. And it can be very complex, but agencies are using a lot of innovative practices now, which we can certainly talk about, to reduce that complexity. So for example, the DHS Procurement Innovation Lab, or the PIL, some agencies have very similar organizations, could really help us reduce the cycle time by allowing us to take advantage of some of the existing practices to modernize our system. So for example, I'm using capability statements instead of long proposals, doing advisory down selects, for example, so that we're not carrying everybody through the process if that's not appropriate. Oral proposals. A lot of the lessons that we learned from the pandemic on virtualization has really helped us reach new suppliers and figure out better ways to communicate information. So all of that is part of the bidding process. And then I think we'll talk a little bit about it later, but the debrief process is critically important, whether you won or you lost. It's really necessary to understand kind of how vendors could improve the next time, and agencies have a responsibility to make sure that they provide meaningful information. So that whole cycle from identifying a need, and then of course contract performance, but going through that bidding process, making sure that you get as much out of it as you can if you're a vendor.
So the needs identified, we go to bidding, where the goal is simplify the bidding process, make it easy to reach out to suppliers, make it easy for them to put their bids in, for procurement officers to review the bids, and then an award is given.
Exactly. And so the technical and the pricing team, if that's necessary, come together to make a recommendation about the award winner. And then it goes through the awarding process. And that's the bidding process, of course, and the pre-award. The post-award, where it's contract management, it's a different process, but it's equally as important as getting the bidding process right on both sides. So, but that is exactly you described, the very first steps in the acquisition process.
Okay, so let's talk about this post-award process. I'm not familiar with this at all, so what is it?
Right. So once the contract is awarded, and there are lots of work goes into that, and you've got the vendor already who has come in and you know, you've chosen that particular vendor, the next best thing is to get the teams together, get your project team, get your contracting team, get the contractors in there for a post-award conference, just to make sure that everybody's on the same page, review and evaluate the performance criteria in the contract. So we usually have a schedule of performance requirements in the contract. So the deadlines, what happens if you miss it? What happens if you exceed it? What does that look like? Performance-based contracts have a lot of that, but making sure that everybody is clear on how folks are going to be evaluated, what the deadlines are, who's working on what, very important. And then of course, the contract management part of it, making sure that at the end of every year, we do a contractor performance assessment so that goes into the database. Everybody has a chance to take a look at that and agree on how that year's performance went. And then that goes all the way through closeout, of course. So that's a much longer process, but it's critically important because that's where you get your outcome. So making sure that you put the very good and strong and clear performance criteria in the contract and then manage to that on the post-award process.
So that the supplier knows exactly what they need to get done and hopefully what time frame and
exactly.
All of that. Okay.
Exactly.
So in the post-award process, they meet with everyone, the winners meet with the federal agency stakeholders, but you also mentioned the debrief, which is, as I understand, where those who don't receive the award get to meet with agency stakeholders to talk about why they didn't get the award. Is that correct?
Exactly. And the debrief is a really important part of the process. Even if you won, I would recommend doing it as well. But if you've lost an acquisition, I think because you've, as a supplier, have invested money in the bid and proposal process, it's really to your benefit to understand kind of where you could have done better, whether it was a technical solution, whether it was a business process, or whether it was a pricing issues. It's really critical to get that information from the contracting officer. And OFPP, my office, issued Myth-Busting 3 several years ago, and the entire guidance document is about how to put together an effective debrief, making sure that you provide enough specific information to the vendors, that you provide enough comparative information to the extent that that makes sense, and really encouraging the folks who were not successful to ask for those debriefings along the way. And so that document, I think, should be helpful in helping agencies be very thorough about that debriefing process and encourage it, to be honest. It's our vendors won't get better unless we tell them how they can do that. And so that debriefing, I think, will be critically important. We've also, Acquisition 360 is a survey tool that we piloted several years ago that you'll see probably a little bit more of. And it'll give the folks who have bid on a requirement the opportunity to go back and evaluate how well the agency did in the bidding process and how well they did during the debriefings. And I think that'll give us some empirical evidence to help us in this space. But again, very important, and encourage both sides to promote the debrief.
Now, another thing that can happen after the award is given, which is not uncommon, is, of course, a protest. I think it's fair to say that protests have become more common in the past 20 years or so. Given that every procurement is different, there's lots of different contract law governing this. Are there common types of protests that most people may see over the course of their career?
Right. Protests are challenges to the way the government conducted a particular procurement. It can be pre-award if the solicitation itself perhaps is maybe unduly restrictive of competition, or the competitive range, perhaps. Folks were had concerns about that, but there can also be post-award challenges. And the most common is a challenge through the Government Accountability Office, or GAO protest. But protests can also go to the U.S. Court of Federal Claims, and they can also go to the contracting officer. And each of these forums has sort of different requirements and different timelines. But it is important to know that protests are a necessary part of public procurement to ensure impartiality, accountability, and it also, I think, builds public confidence in the buying process because you have recourse if you don't think something was handled properly. And understandably, contracting officers and the customers get frustrated when protests are lodged because they can delay delivery of goods and services, but they're still an important part of the process. And again, that debriefing can be critical in ensuring that protests are not lodged just because the industry is lacking information. And so providing as much information as you can along the way, having a very open dialogue during the pre-award process, answering questions from vendors, potential vendors, very thoroughly can help to reduce the chance that protests happen. And that being very clear, I think, also in your evaluation criteria in the solicitation, making sure everybody understands how they're going to be evaluated. That's really an important part of keeping us transparent about how the process went.
Now, I'm wondering, did I miss anything, or have we sort of covered the very, very broad strokes of the procurement process?
I think we have covered the broad strokes of sort of how it works now. And of course, we've been doing quite a bit on modernizing and streamlining our processes. So would love to get a chance to talk about that too.
Then let's talk about that.
Excellent.
So you've mentioned some of the strategies that are being employed to simplify the procurement process, category management. What else, whether it's a technology or a technique, is being prioritized now to sort of make this work a lot smoother.
Exactly. So leadership support for testing new ways of doing business. We talked a little bit about that when I mentioned the DHS Procurement Innovation Lab and the other teams that are doing similar things. I think this is probably the most important aspect. The FAR is a very formidable document, but there really are a lot of flexibilities in there that can be lifted up and used throughout the procurement process. And the labs and the work that DHS has done and the other agencies, of course, has really given contracting officers the space to be a little bit more creative and to use a little more discretion in their judgment throughout the process. So if you folks, if your leaders are, or your or listeners rather, are interested, in March of 2016, OMB set up the Acquisition Innovation Advocate. So we thought there should be a senior person at every agency who advocated for this type of innovation and again, created some space for contracting officers to try new ways of doing business and to promote that. And a lot of the agencies set up the innovation labs. And so we really put, I think, a marker down that said, we want you to be creative. We want you to use your judgment, your highly skilled, very dedicated workforce. We want to make sure that you look at the FAR in a different way. I think that's been really important. If you go to acquisition.gov, every agency can find their acquisition innovation advocate in case they're not familiar with that person. We're also automating business processes, right? We're using robotic process automation so that we, if we're doing the same thing over and over again, let's find a technology solution that works. We're using artificial intelligence to help us crawl through a lot of data and information. We're using data mashups to pull in different sources of information so that our contracting officers and our program managers can use that information to make better decisions. I don't know that we've mentioned, but the periodic table of acquisition innovation is a really important part of this whole process. So if you haven't seen it, you can Google it. It's on the FAI.gov website, FAI.gov/periodic-table. And it really walks everybody through the different processes and the different phases of the acquisition. And it talks about innovative ways to do those kinds of things. It gives good case studies and examples. And then we're going to, we worked with ACT-IAC on this. So you guys were instrumental in helping us think through how to present this information so that our contracting officers, our program managers, and others can see what, how we could take perhaps use innovative technology and use some innovative practices to reduce the cycle time or the PAL time, the procurement acquisition lead time, reduce some of the burden that necessarily comes with the complex process that is an acquisition. And so this periodic table is a knowledge management system that we're really sending folks to so that they understand what they can do. And they can tell their supervisors, look, somebody else has done this at another agency. This was the outcome. This was the time that they saved or the money that they saved or the improvement in the outcome that they got. So that knowledge management system, I think, is really important. But again, that's how we are thinking about modernizing and simplifying the acquisition process, using category management to help us with the common requirements so that we're not spending as much time over and over again. And then using these innovative practices in our category management as well, but also in our higher value acquisitions to make sure that we are getting the most out of the process.
Now, when the FAR was written, of course, we didn't have access to many of these new technologies, as you mentioned, robotic process automation. Are there any challenges with working within the FAR, but also instituting some of these technologies?
So I think for the FAR, actually, it is very formidable, but it provides the guardrails for the system. And that's, it's important to make sure that both sides understand what those guardrails are. But within those guardrails, there's a lot of flexibility. So when we were thinking about how to manage sort of the change that technology is bringing to our workforce, how would we do that? And we found that just by lifting up the processes that we can already use can be helpful. But I think the technology has changed our process in a couple of different ways. It's what we buy, how we buy it, and then how we use it. So when we think about buying technology, right, this goes back to what we were buying. When I started the government, it's not as much technology. Now it's everywhere. So how do you focus and make sure that the workforce understands the cybersecurity requirements? How do they determine the dynamics in a tech market, right? If you've got a program manager who knows about it, your contracting officer may be buying technology and may be buying other services and may be buying lots of other things. So how do you make sure that our workforce is prepared? We started the DITAP program, the Digital Information Technology Acquisition Professionals Program, that paired the contracting folks with the IT professionals so that they learned how to buy IT together, because it's a little bit different and a little more dynamic. So we wanted to get ahead of that curve. So we started the DITAP program. When you think about what we're buying in terms of technology, since it's so pervasive, we stood up the IT VMO, or the IT Vendor Management Office, over at GSA, which is helping us think through common approaches and common analytics for technology and doing supplier engagement with the IT community. And that is part of our category management strategy, but that's helping us to simplify and streamline. And then how are we going to use technology in the future? We talked a little bit about AI and RPA for some of our common functions, but we're also looking at high definition acquisition intelligence. How do we take all the data that we have? And again, when I started FPDS, the Federal Procurement Data System, was really just a system of record. We were more interested in getting the information in there than getting it out. And now we're thinking about all the data that we collect. We collect billions of data points every year. How do we take that information, maybe pull in other data sources that the government is generating, or even some privately generated data sources? How do we pull all that in and convert it to intelligence so that our contracting officers and program managers have better information, more actionable information moving forward? And so I think in the technology space, that's really where our focus has been, is getting our folks trained, making sure we understand the unique needs of buying technology and working in an acquisition environment that's so that has so much technology as part of what we're buying, and then also how we're using this to our advantage. And I think it's an exciting time for us for that. And the high def acquisition intelligence initiative, I think, is going to be really helpful for the workforce.
All right, final question, Leslie. If you could wave a magic wand for anything in the procurement space, what would it be?
So I really think the future is now. We're evolving at an incredibly fast pace, and we're excited to work with our agency leaders and our industry colleagues. We've been very interested in getting the industry voice to the table through our myth-busting series and through the work that we've done. These new and emerging technologies are exciting. We want to reduce the burden on businesses. We also want to reduce the burden on our workforce by using these technologies. We also want to pivot from compliance to innovation. And so we talked a little bit about the work that we're doing there, but I think that work is critical. But most importantly, and the reason I came to OMB a long time ago, was to focus on the workforce. So we want to make sure that our 40,000 contracting officers and hundreds of thousands of others involved in the process are trained and developed using modern standards and using contemporary learning methods. I think we've learned a lot in the last couple of years about how to do that. We want to focus our high value work, let our time and talent focus on high value work. And then we also want to make sure that the pipeline is there to bring in the next generation to explain what we do to folks who perhaps don't understand what acquisition is, make sure they know how important it can be to this country, and bringing them in so that they can take our place when the time is right for there. But it's an exciting time for the community, and I'm very excited to be here to talk to you about it.
Well, hopefully if someone didn't know what acquisition is, they learned just a little bit more by listening to today's episode. Leslie Field, thank you so much for joining me. Leslie Field, Acting Administrator for Federal Procurement Policy at the Office of Management and Budget.
Okay. Thank you, Colin.
And that's a wrap on The Buzz with ACT-IAC. Join us next week for more hot topics and top issues affecting the federal technology market. Don't forget to subscribe and leave a review on your favorite podcast platform, and follow us on Twitter at ACT-IAC. More information about today's show can be found in the episode notes. For more insights, visit www.actiac.org. Thanks for listening.